paper 18, right at the beginning, which is old single column, page 207. Okay, so papers 18 and 19, okay, are a new group. Certainly similar to the previous two paper group with the Supreme Spirits. You know, and you can see the title here, Supreme Trinity Personalities. It certainly sounds like there's some similarity. You know, there's a lot of the Trinity, you know, definitely in play still, like we were seeing when we were talking about the Supreme Spirits. But you'll notice there's a definite difference about these two papers. So they form a separate little group unto themselves of the Trinity origin beings. You know, more directly, not with all of the kind of the confusion of bringing in the infinite spirit and all that complicated system and all that stuff we were talking about and personalities that are hard to understand as personalities or, you know, whatnot, all that confusion. Much more definitive here, expression, Trinity origin beings. And, you know, as you glance down, you see right up front, it's the of days, primarily is what we're talking about here. So let's just jump in, and you know, it's fairly straightforward content, especially since some of the complexities we've talked about in advance here already. You know, they needed to basically just lay out the facts for these different beings. But you'll see there's all kinds of fun little tidbits thrown in, like they always do.
Paper 18, the Supreme Trinity Personalities. Supreme Trinity personalities are all created for specific service. They are designed by the Divine Trinity for the fulfillment of certain specific duties, and they are qualified to serve with perfection of technique and finality of devotion. There are seven orders of the Supreme Trinity personalities. 1, Trinitized Secrets of Supremacy. 2, Eternals of Days. 3, Ancients of Days. 4, Perfections of Days. 5, Recents of Days. 6, Unions of Days. 7, Faithfuls of Days. These beings of administrative perfection are of definite and final numbers. Their creation is a past event. No more are being personalized. Throughout the grand universe, these Supreme Trinity personalities represent the administrative policies of the Paradise Trinity. They represent the justice and are the executive judgment of the Paradise Trinity. They form an interrelated line of administrative perfection extending from the Paradise spheres of the Father to the headquarters worlds of the local universes and to the capitals of their component constellations.
Okay, let's do that one little tweak they're doing in there. I mean, you see there's an italicized word, you know, so they're probably wanting you to at least notice one little thing in there. Okay, so Trinity origin beings, obviously, right up front, you want to constantly be reminding yourself of those four basic functions of the Paradise Trinity. If the Paradise Trinity is going to be the origin of these beings, you know, that's always being fed in then to the nature of these beings. So what are those four functions? Justice administration, totality attitudes, coordinate action, and cosmic over-control. Okay, so obviously that first one, which we haven't talked a lot about recently, is front and center. Okay, justice administration is one of the fundamental functions, you know, and, you know, functioning. I mean, remember, a deity is a constantly functioning fact. It's constantly the dynamic fact of justice administration, the Paradise Trinity. And so they're saying, okay, they represent that. You know, they represent the justice, that justice administration functioning in the Paradise Trinity, and are the executive judgment of the Paradise Trinity. So just by nature, they're getting that justice from the Trinity. But then they're that functioning justice personified. So they're executive judgment then. And the R is just to stress that. They literally are executive judgment personified. That's just what they are. And we all know the Ancients of Days are, right at the core of that whole executive judgment fact. And they're just reminding you that it's not just the Ancients of Days, all these beings, all these Supreme Trinity personalities are very definitively in that mode. Yes, they do some other things, but that's the real core. So of those four facts about the Trinity, the leading edge is the one that we haven't talked about a lot, that justice administration. But you'll see the totality attitude, and coordinate action, cosmic control, those are coming in too. I won't always point it out, but just kind of notice that as we're going, how many times they use the word coordinate, or coordinate, because of that coordinate action from the Trinity, how much they have a totality attitude about things. All right, so justice. What else we have here?
All Trinity origin beings are created in paradise perfection in all their divine attributes. Only in the realms of experience has the passing of time added to their equipment for cosmic service. There is never any danger of default or risk of rebellion with Trinity origin beings. They are divinity essence. And they have never been known to depart from the divine and perfect path of personality conduct.
Okay. Now, just, especially as I was just pointing it out, when they say something like, there is never any danger of default or risk of rebellion, what would be the really basic way to understand why that is? You could say, well, they must have really divine personality, expression, et cetera. But, even more fundamentally than their personality control of themselves, of their selves, what's one of the fundamental aspects of their nature? Because they're coming from the Trinity, because they're a Trinity origin being. They have a totality attitude. Okay. The primary reason, that as you go down the chain of downstepping beings, the primary reason that when you get down to Lananadex, that you can have, that the potential of rebellion is literally in play, is embodied in the coinage of their name, Lananadex, no longer one-like expression. Okay? This is the foundation of totality attitude expression, not as far removed from no longer one-like expression as you can get. Okay, so just very fundamentally, even separate from personality control, is just this pure totality attitude that there are no blind spots. Okay? They have a fundamental totality attitude. They see with a totality attitude. Okay, so that's, try to always challenge yourself to start really seeing the fundamental literalness of what's in play here, beyond personality. And definitely if we're talking about Trinity origin beings, you're probably doing your understanding a disservice if your first thought is to interpret them as if they were just a father origin being and the personality fact was first and foremost. It's not first and foremost, but a non-personal fact like the Paradise Trinity being the origin. So seek a more fundamental, foundational reason for it. And the only reason I'm stressing this so much is because this is the gateway to going beyond just the revelation of the Father, that's in the fifth epical revelation. To begin to go beyond just the revelation of God that's in the fifth epical revelation, to really start to engage the revelation of deity, something more fundamental than personality. It's just, you're taking delight in cultivating, in a sense, to really strike step with the fifth epical revelation. If you're constantly looking for what's going on in a situation besides personality. And we've seen that, we saw how much they emphasized that with the seven master spirits. I mean, the big deal in play was not so much the personality, it was their fundamental deity difference, and that was what was behind the sevenfold differential of the seven super universes. It wasn't just because they were different persons, absolutely unique persons. Okay, so group number one, you remember where we've talked about the Trinitized secrets of supremacy before we even start reading here. Where did we see them in a previous paper here, just recently? Yeah, when we were doing the sacred spheres, right? The seven fathers' worlds. They're the directors of those seven worlds of the Father. So what else do they say in here about them?
One, the Trinitized secrets of supremacy. There are seven worlds in the innermost circuit of the Paradise satellites, and each of these exalted worlds is presided over by a core of 10 Trinitized secrets of supremacy. They are not creators, but they are supreme and ultimate administrators. The conduct of the affairs of these seven fraternal spheres is wholly committed to this core of 70 supreme directors. Though the offspring of the Trinity supervise these seven sacred spheres nearest paradise, this group of worlds is universally known as the personal circuit of the Universal Father.
Notice how direct they are here, too, in clarifying this whole issue about, well, should I call this individual God or not? Remember how we were struggling with that with the Supreme Spirits. Here it's very definitive right in front. They are not creators. Okay, so they're not God. They're obviously very divine, but they're not God. Yep.
In that sentence, they are not creators, but they are supreme and ultimate administrators.
Oh, yeah, actually, I forgot to mention that. Yeah, okay. Yeah, go ahead. What's your question?
Would that imply that prior to the seven super universes, they may have been there but not functioning?
Remember, these are, they're going to mention that directly in a little bit. These are eternal beings. They were part of the eternal universe. Always have been. An original part of the eternal universe. A couple things. Let me actually go along your line before I say what I was going to say. Just mentioning that there's something going on beyond supremacy with a being is a deeply mysterious fact from our temporal perspective, where we're struggling trying to have something besides just the temporal perspective we're born with. If they have ultimate personality activity, like they're saying here, so how does that work? I mean, from their perspective, is the whole master universe already in existence? Are functioning somehow with that in sight? Or I mean, how exactly are you supposed to understand? You have this with all these, you know, the master architects, you know, all these beings. It's like, well, what exactly do they see? How does this work? I've mentioned that there are times when they speak of the absonite, you know, spheres, you know, i.e. post-finite age sort of creation, already in existence. You know, and yet we know when we're talking about the master architects, we're talking about them engaging the finite, you know, starting up a whirl in the force charge in a finite sense and stuff. Yeah, it's coming down from the absonite. But, you know, how exactly are you supposed to think about this? You know, with our temporal confusion, it's hard to know how to think about this. I mean, definitely you have beings on the Father's worlds that are also functioning with ultimate personality activity, you know, and they could be overseeing that, you know. So, and matter of fact, they tell you point blank that of all the circuits in the central universe, you very definitively have ultimate personality activity on that innermost circuit, on the Father's circuit. Okay, so it gives you kind of an out. It's like, well, okay, even now there's that. That stuff is happening there, and someone needs to oversee that. But there's always this other question. What about if you let go of time? How exactly, you know, do they see the master universe, these very high beings? And now I'm going to mention what I forgot I was going to bring in. When we read about them before, you know, in the Father's worlds, they pointed out it's even more extreme than this. Yes, they have supreme personality activity. Yes, they have ultimate personality activity. But they even go beyond that. These particular beings have supreme ultimate, you know, hyphenated, supreme ultimate personality activity. You know, and that's in the domain of the cosmos infinite, beyond the master universe. So, you know, you really have to wonder, what do they see? What do they perceive? With their higher consciousness. Yeah, they have the ability to engage us down low, and that's all we're ever going to be interacting with when we're, you know, engaging them, you know, is their supremacy. But, you know, what else, you know? I mean, how does a master architect interact with them? What is that like, you know? So these are, they're not God, they're not personalized deity, but they're very, very, very divine. Supreme, ultimate, and even supreme ultimate personality activity. You know, that's on a co-absolute stage that you have supreme ultimate personality activity. Okay, what else we have here?
The Trinitized secrets of supremacy function in groups of 10 as coordinate and joint directors of their respective spheres. But they also function individually in particular fields of responsibility. The work of each of these special worlds is divided into 7 major departments, and one of these coordinate rulers presides over each such division of specialized activities. The remaining 3 act as the personal representatives of triune deity in relation to the other 7, one representing the Father, one the Son, and one the Spirit.
If I'm remembering right, I believe I mentioned this back when we were reading about them before, because it was important for what we were studying. Remember, they were talking about the Father's spheres and how they had sectors. You know, and we recognized, you know, that's to be understood pretty directly, the definition of a sector. In other words, the world is, you know, is like an orange with longitudinal sectors. Okay, 7 longitudinal sectors, you know, and they'll talk about a particular sector, like the 7th sector is being where the secrets are on a particular sphere, you know, so you have these longitudinal wedges, okay, sectors. And so, you know, you have 7 of these individuals for each of those seven sectors, and then you've got three. You know, I don't know if you're supposed to think, well, are there like polar regions where the three are, or, you know, or whatever, you know, but anyway. Noting that there's each of the seven worlds has seven sectors. So it's a different seven than, you know, around paradise, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, Father's worlds. They're going to mention that seven next. But here we have, you know, this is really the 10. This is the 10 circuits of the central universe, a 7 and a 3. Okay. It's the 7 that's part of that 10. Okay, not the 7 going around. Okay. Let's read that next paragraph there.
Although there is a definite class resemblance which typifies the Trinitized secrets of supremacy, they also disclose seven distinct group characteristics. The 10 supreme directors of Divinington affairs are reflective of the personal character and nature of the Universal Father. And so it is with each of these seven spheres. Each group of 10 resembles that deity or deity association which is characteristic of their domain. The 10 directors who rule Ascendington are reflective of the combined nature of the Father, Son, and Spirit.
Okay, so just to wrap a comprehension around all that. We have the 7 and the 3. We have that full 10, you know, and at right angles to that, orthogonal to that. You know, you have the 7 as in the 7 master spirits, the 7 super universes, that sevenfold pattern. So you have the 10 and the 7. They're encompassing all of that, that differential. All of that individuation. It's a very totality attitude. You know, they're encompassing all of those primal patterns. Okay? So that's a way that you see their totality attitude coming out. You know, that you take these 70, which, you know, and just imagining them being brought into existence would be all the same. But then you engage them to a particular Father's world where you have that seven-flavored deity presence, and they, you know, like a chameleon, take on that flavor, that pattern, that color of that world. And so they get differentiated into seven different shades of their initial common nature. You know, but then they've got the whole, you know, they're spanning the whole spectrum. Both, you know, this, all the dimensionality of the central universe this way and radially, you know, circumferentially, you know, around the circumference and radially. Okay, so there's their totality attitude. Let's see. Anything else we want to bring out of there? Maybe just stressing. Yeah, you notice that they used the word reflective. Yeah. And like I was mentioning as you're going through the Supreme Spirits, the more you get into these details, the more you begin to have a better sense of when to use or why the revelators used when they did that word reflective. It's when there is this very sort of fundamental synchronization between two things that's going on. It's a deep, you know, it's deeper than, okay, I'm a person and I have absolute control of myself and I'm going to micromanage myself to do this certain way. It's not like that. It's more fundamental than that. It's they just reflect that. You know, they've become of that. Okay. So kind of, you know, note that when they use that word reflective, they're wanting you to again begin to get an understanding that goes beyond a father-like sense of things, you know, that real definitive individuated sense. Okay.
I can reveal very little about the work of these high personalities on the seven sacred worlds of the Father, for they are truly the secrets of supremacy. There are no arbitrary secrets associated with the approach to the Universal Father, the Eternal Son, or the Infinite Spirit. The deities are an open book to all who attain divine perfection. But all the secrets of supremacy can never be fully attained. Always will we be unable fully to penetrate the realms containing the personality secrets of deity association with the sevenfold grouping of created beings.
You know, even Trinity origin beings, you know, he's saying that this is a universal fact.
Since the work of these supreme directors has to do with the intimate and personal contact of the deities with these seven basic groupings of universe beings when domiciled on these seven special worlds or while functioning throughout the grand universe, it is fitting that these very personal relations and extraordinary contacts should be held sacredly secret. The Paradise Creators respect the privacy and sanctity of personality, even in their lowly creatures. And this is true both of individuals and of the various separate orders of personalities. To beings of even high universe attainment, these secret worlds ever remain a test of loyalty. It is given us fully and personally to know the eternal gods, freely to know their characters of divinity and perfection, but it is not granted us fully to penetrate all of the personal relations of the Paradise Rulers with all of their creature beings.
All right, now we need to talk about this because this is a long-standing point of confusion. So let's use this opportunity again to work on improving the understanding. Again, at the root of the difficulty of recognition here is challenging yourself all the more to distinguish self from personality. So we'll see if we can make some more progress on appreciating that distinction. You know, so when they say the Paradise Creators respect the privacy and sanctity of personality, even in their lowly creatures. You know, look around the room. You're one of the lowly creatures. Okay, so there's that. Now, in that second paragraph, notice how they use the expression personal relations. Okay. So now a way to begin to think about this. What are we talking about here? What is a personality secret?
Okay. Between the thought adjuster and us?
Between anything and anything.
I mean, that would be a personal secret.
Well, we're going to figure out what they can read and what they can't. But that's, you know, I mean, we can't just assume, well, I don't want them to read that, and so I declare that they can't. That's not going to be, you know, we have to figure out what is in play here. How do I know? I mean, for instance, a thought adjuster is not a person, so you can't have a personality secret with a thought adjuster. So there's something to start with. A personality secret with a thought adjuster is impossible because it's not a person. Okay, all you can have is a relationship of one self to another self with a thought adjuster. You're, right now, your mortal self to its divine self. Okay, so that's a self relationship. So you notice the personal relations. I can't have personal relations with a thought adjuster. I can't have personal relations with a circuit spirit, like we just talked about in the previous paper. Okay, so how can we get a better sense? What exactly is going on here? Just remember that you've got a secret in your head, or what you think is a secret. Okay, ask yourself a simple question. This secret that you're holding, could you tell someone that secret over some sort of communication device? The universe circuits, a telephone, you know, a telegraph, you know, smoke signals, the reflectivity mechanism, whatever. If If you could tell someone else that secret through a communication mechanism, then it's not a personality secret. Okay, it's a self-secret, or so you think, because there are no self-secrets. Selves are an open book. They can be seen. Okay? So, now what's another area where we've had a similar reflection here? The word knowledge. You know, I stress it all the time. There's two parts to the word knowledge. There's the know part, the root, and the ledge part. Yeah. The ledge part means that it's knowingness that can be given, that can be transferred like across a communication circuit, a telephone wire or whatever. Okay. That's not a personality secret. If it's a knowingness that can be given, okay, then that's not what we're talking about. Okay.
If you can keep it a secret, it's not a secret.
Yeah. If you can keep it, right. I mean, a personality secret, you know, has to do with the fact, for instance, if you think about your relationship to the Universal Father. Universal Father's a person, you're a person. So there's personal relations possible there. You have an absolutely unique personality. And the Father looks at that absolutely unique personality with an absolute eye. There's absolutely no one else in that relationship. It's an absolute relationship. It's not a relative relationship. Okay? That personality relation is not shareable. It has no relationship to any other being in the universe, not even the eternal Son, not the conjoint actor. They're infinite persons, but they don't have that. They have an infinite self, okay? But, you know, infinity minus infinity is still infinity. You can take a lot of things away from infinity and still have infinity, okay? The eternal Son and the conjoint actor don't have a relationship to my personal relation to the Father. Everything of a genuine personal connection between myself and the Father is a secret, simply because it can't be anything else. You can't share it. It's not a knowingness that can be given to anyone else. None of you in the room have one shred of overlap with my personality. But you have lots of overlap with myself. So I have all kinds of self thoughts that I can share with you because we have something in common there and I can communicate self things. I could tell you a secret that my mortal self has. Okay? I could whisper it to you. Even if I wanted to give you a personality secret, I couldn't. It's not shareable. Okay?
Well, it's not knowable.
It's knowable by me, but not by you.
But you couldn't describe it.
Right. See, I couldn't. There's no knowingness that I can give you of it. I have full experience of it, but I can't share that. It's secret. Okay? Not because...
You can't keep.
Okay. So, I mean, to really think about, think about how few things probably would fit into this category of something that. So what do you have in your experience that you is beyond shareable? See, I mean, the first step is to recognize that it's going to be a very tiny little thing if you can find something, because we're just embryos. We're just starting to have any personality expression. We have all kinds of self-assertion in ourselves, have all kinds of thoughts, and they like to compartmentalize them and keep some of them secret. But beings, you know, hundreds of thousands of light years away can read those secret self-thoughts, okay? Those are open to view.
Secret is
Okay. So you can see here, I mean, when they say the Paradise Creators respect the privacy and sanctity of personality, if you don't understand what personality is, the difference between personality and self, you're going to have nothing but misinterpretation of that sentence. You're going to think, well, I can keep secrets from God.
You can't even give us an example of what it would be because you don't know.
It's so secret.
I can't keep it.
It's not like I think that I'm some advanced person. I know that I'm basically just an animal origin self who's trying to get a faint flicker of faith, an actual personality expression happening. To have something in my the deep core of my inner life that I think transcends my mortal self, that's real. That the adjuster could actually make a copy of in my soul. Okay? Something that I share with an infinite person. And I'm comfortable with that. It's not scary at all. That's all you have to do. Just let it be a fact that most of what we think makes us a person is just a self. And it's going to die, okay? But nothing of survival value is ever lost. So don't worry about what's going to die. It's not worth keeping anyway, okay? You know, to be more precise, it's not keepable. That's why it's lost. It's simply not savable. You can't infuse it into spirit substance, so it can't be saved. Only that which can be spiritized can be saved. Okay. All right, so just want to really stress that again. And you'll see this actually comes up in a little bit when we're talking about some of these beings. This whole issue about what you can do over a communication circuit, you know, and what you can't.
Okay. So, Chris, yep.
Yeah, what?
I was wondering if it had anything to do with the inner life.
The only place that you can have one of these personality secrets, quote unquote, is in your inner life right now. At a very advanced stage, there's 7 worlds where there's a sector on each of those worlds. For instance, where individuals are functioning in the, you know, immersed in one of these personal relation secrets, one of these, you know, genuine personality engagement phenomena, where there's real personality afoot. And it's not all just in the inner life. It's so definitive that there's an outer life expression of this fact. And that's why that sector is off limits. It's like a place where you can see the inner life. And so it's not, you're not allowed to go there. I'm not allowed to go and see the inner life of Creator sons, you know, in their relationship to the Universal Father. That's their inner life sanctity, you know. But it's so definitive that it's, you know, in a sense, overflowing out of some sort of, you know, temple within sort of analogy picture. Okay, it's manifest at large in that sector, this personality relation. You know, so those secret sectors are like vast temples of inner life, space. There, for a whole group of beings, that's a collective temple of inner life. Okay? A cathedral. Yeah. See?
You got me so confused, I don't know whether I'm coming or going.
Oh, that's good. Sure. Okay.
The Revelators, were they all personally present here on the planet?
Yeah, the Revelators came here, yeah.
See, none of them did this from far off.
No.
They all personally came here.
Yeah. Yeah, which, you know, they make a point of saying that, you know, that I came to your world, and, you know, and just how amazing that is, you know.
Yeah, it's in the introduction between the foreword and the paper one.
So it must not, it must be indispensable that they
person. Yeah. Yeah. You know, they needed to be present, obviously. Or they, you know, I mean, they wouldn't have come all the way from Uversa. It's a long trip, okay? Yeah, if it wasn't necessary. Yeah.
So now, I got to ask you, you said knowing, knowledge is knowingness that can be given.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's not a personality secret. So if we knew it, we could give it, so that wouldn't be a secret. So but between the Father and us, there's absolutely no one else but me and the Father that knows this secret. But we don't know the secret because we can't share it. So that's the part that confuses me.
I mean, let's go back to the knowledge thing. Okay, there is knowingness besides knowledge. I can know truth, but that's not knowledge. I can't tell you about that. I can't communicate that to you. The knowingness that I have in truth, not of truth. I mean, I can give you some knowledge about truth, okay? But my knowingness in truth, if it's genuine knowingness in truth, it's fundamentally personal. You know, when you look on the chart here, where's the spirit of truth? It's in the personality block, okay? You know, if you're actually engaged in truth, that is fundamentally a personal experience. And I can't communicate that to you. I can talk for hours and hours about this book, and I'll never speak truth to you, because truth is not knowledge. It's not knowingness that can be given. I can't jiggle the air molecules to get it to you, okay? And so, you know, that's another one. Just, you know, that what's the difference between fact and truth? And there's so many people that think they know truth, and they like to tell you about it. They think they can tell you truth. Proof that they don't know what truth is. Truth is not a knowingness that can be given. So everyone that says, you know, you should go to this talk because he speaks truth. No, that's impossible. Okay? You can't communicate truth. Okay? Truth is not just sacred facts, you know, or special facts. Or, you know, and again, the revelation of truth in this book then, see, can't be the words. These words have been given to me. They're, you know, they can be typeset. They're so givable, okay? The words are not the truth. The truth is something, you know, somehow invisibly flowing through the words, and something that only a person could see. And so if someone reads this book and goes, man, whatever, see, they know not truth. They know not personality activity. They know selves. And the self-righteousness of a self, okay? They know not personality. They know not God. They know not truth. You know, the truth is invisible to them, okay? So, you know, just don't let that be watered down in your mind. Let it be a stark line that you draw, you know, between self and personality, between fact and truth, you know, between knowledge and something transcendent of knowledge, even transcendent of wisdom. Truth. A knowingness that can't be given. And all the things that are connected to that, like secret sectors on Father's worlds, temples at large. Okay? Inner life's made world. Okay? All right. So, there's the little bit more, see? Then, he says, I can reveal very little, but, you know, if you start thinking about it, this is pretty cool stuff. I mean, That wasn't just dry, abstract beings. We're talking about us. See that, they try to really bring it home at the end there, something that they thought would get your juices flowing a little bit. Okay? Figure out how these Trinitized secrets of supremacy have a closeness to you that you never imagined. If you can begin to understand why they're called the secrets of supremacy, you're actually beginning to understand the difference between personality and self. And you're starting to actually separate all the things that, like, faith is actually getting separated from belief. Logic is getting separated from rationalization. Moral consciousness is getting separated from ethical consciousness. You're starting to become a cosmic citizen and not just a potential. All right, so they're eternal. There's also some other eternal ones that they decided was basically what all they could use to label them.
To the Eternals of Days. Each of the billion worlds of Havona is directed by a Supreme Trinity personality. These rulers are known as the Eternals of Days, and they number exactly 1 billion, one for each of the Havona spheres. They are the offspring of the Paradise Trinity, but like the secrets of supremacy, there are no records of their origin. Forever have these two groups of all-wise fathers ruled their exquisite worlds of the Paradise Havona system, and they function without rotation or reassignment.
Never do they get bored or anything, even remotely close to it. Notice one of the really important things that you just saw there that we were kind of grasping for in the previous paper, trying to somehow get something concrete we could hold on to, this fuzzy spirit things that were so hard to understand. These two groups of all-wise fathers. Okay, so even though these are Trinity origin beings, you know definitively that they're first source personalities. So they're going to be much more like what we're familiar with, much more directly understandable as some really, really fancy person, to the extent to which I understand myself as a person. Okay? These are definitely first source personalities, not third source personalities, where it might be really kind of hard to understand what's going on. Like a creative mother spirit, it's not a first source personality. She's a third source personality, and that's why she's so different than our common experience so far. Okay? So there's another thing that you see why we've got a really a different group of beings we're talking about. Yes, you've got the Trinity definitively in place still. These are very definitive. Okay, there's a being here on this Havona world, and one more on this one, and one more on that one. They're not some sort of presence or quasi-person, very definitively, these all-wise fathers. And you see there, so like I said, see they're eternal. All these beings have always been there. There is no record of them coming to existence or anything like that.
The Eternals of Days are visible to all will creatures dwelling in their domains. They preside over the regular planetary conclaves. Periodically and by rotation, they visit the headquarters spheres of the 7 superuniverses. They are close of kin to and are the divine equals of the Ancients of Days, who preside over the destinies of the 7 supergovernments. When an Eternal of Days is absent from his sphere, his world is directed by a Trinity teacher son.
Okay, just that last little bit, we'll get to Trinity Teacher Sons in a little while, but, that should remind you, on the one hand, you have Trinity Teacher Sons coming to worlds like ours, in that age prior to the Age of Light and Life, and so you might think, so they're descending sons, and they're fairly, they can get down, when an Eternal of Days leaves his world, Yeah, they're not very lowly beings. Okay, they're pretty high beings. That's some pretty serious stuff there. How do you rate to be able to sub for an eternal of days? I mean, pretty amazing. Okay. Yeah?
Where do you have any idea where they would go?
Who, what, where, what? Just like they said. I mean, visit the headquarters spheres of the seven super universes. I mean, the primary thing, this is one of the really key sentences in the book, that they are close of kin to and are the divine equals of the Ancients of Days. Okay, and we talked about the Eternals of Days when we were talking about Havona before. Remember, they have supreme personality activity, of course, because they're a supreme Trinity personality. Plus, they also have ultimate personality activity, also, because you have definite ultimate stuff going on in Havona that they have to be able to oversee. But there aren't creators. They're not God. Okay, we know the Ancients of Days are God. Yeah, and they just have supreme. So you have, they're divine equals. They have the supremacy in common. And what they don't have in common, though, gives them still a measure of commonality. That above mere supreme and being God that an Ancient of Days has, and the ultimate personality activity that the Eternal Son has. So they're telling you they're very close. In a sense, they're kind of reciprocals or something of each other, okay, in some way. So it's not surprising that they have an of days name, unlike the previous ones did. They want to definitely give them an of days name so that you see right in their name that there's this closeness to the Ancients of Days. All these things are of days because of the Ancients of Days, and then everyone is, built upon that foundation, of course.
Does a given super universe expect only certain Eternals?
No. Now, no. Remember how that works. You have a billion local systems in each super universe because you take one Havona world, and it's a pattern world for a sevenfold expression. You take that one source pattern, you express it out through the seven different master spirits, and you get seven different local systems patterned after that one Havona world. So that's why there's 7 billion local systems, because there's 7 billion Havona worlds. So those local systems are seeking their pattern. Those who are over controlling the evolution are trying to move a local system to be eventually fully synchronized with its source world. And so every one of the billion Eternals of Days has an interest in each super universe. Yeah. Right. So And when we were talking about Uversa, back in just previous paper, you can go back if you don't remember. They mentioned that again, that the Eternals of Days are often there and actually participating with the Ancients of Days in some of the oversight of the super universe.
Yeah. I like the idea of meeting my other sister systems in the other super universes, mm-hmm. because we have this system of Satania as a sister system.
Yeah.
in the other six super universes. Yeah. That's how the math works out.
Yeah, and you'll get to meet some of those ascenders. Yeah. See, when you get to Havona, oh, you're from my sister system. Yeah,
they just visit the headquarters world. They don't go to the.
Yeah, as far as, I mean, they're trying to get, make personal contact with their kin, the Ancients of Days. So that's, and just like the Ancients of Days don't need to leave the headquarters, if they need to know anything else, they wouldn't have to either, because everything is being fed up through reflectivity to Uversa in our case, anyway, so.
Yeah,
You said there was a billion local systems on each super universe.
In each super universe, yep.
7 billion local what?
So you have 7 billion local systems all the way around, you know, in the 7 super universes.
The universe.
And just remember that whole hierarchy. You have, you know, 100 local systems in a constellation, 100 constellations in a local universe, 100 local universes in a minor sector, 100 minor sectors in a major sector, 10 major sectors in a super universe. You just multiply all those tens together. You know.
It took me all night, don't worry.
Yep.
Amazon, page 167.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's see, so what else do we have in there? One other little thing there. Just that fact, again, that you, one of these eternals of days, you know, goes on this long trip from point A to point B. Again, see, it's much more, it's like, okay, I understand that. You've got this individual. He's located here, and he goes on a long journey, and then he's located. It's much more father-like, you know, instead of this extended presence thing. It's much more understandable. So, yeah. See, that's the difference here. We're dealing with beings, yeah, they're very high, but they're much more immediately understandable what's going on with them because they're much more of a definitive individual like we are. Okay, so, you know, more, and even if they aren't a god, you know, their self is, you know, is a very localized fact. Okay, so, we haven't gotten to ancient days yet, but just before we leave it behind, remember how, you have this very, as we're coming down this hierarchy, you know, you have the list on the first page here, you know, you're literally going down. You have supreme, ultimate, and supreme, ultimate. You drop down a notch. You have supreme and ultimate. You drop down the next notch. You know it's going to be just supreme. Okay. All right.
Except for the established orders of life, such as the Havona natives and other living creatures of the central universe, the resident eternals of days have developed their respective spheres entirely in accordance with their own personal ideas and ideals. They visit each other's planets, but they do not copy or imitate. They are always and wholly original. The architecture, natural embellishment, Urantia structures, and spirit creations are exclusive and unique on each sphere. Every world is a place of everlasting beauty and is wholly unlike any other world in the central universe. And you will each spend a longer or shorter time on each of these unique and thrilling spheres on your way inward through Havona to paradise. It is natural on your world to speak of paradise as upward, but it would be more correct to refer to the divine goal of ascension as inward.
Okay, so we mentioned this before when we were talking about Havona. So like they're saying very directly here, the reason that each of the billion Havona worlds is absolutely unique is because it reflects the personality of an individual eternal of days, and personality is absolutely unique. So that, you know, here you see personality rather than self being the definitive factor. See, in individuating things, differentiating, you know, the places. You know, each one has this distinct personality footprint, whereas the 7 super universes are fundamentally distinct because each has a distinct self footprint of a master spirit. Yeah, personality's on top of that, but it's the self that's really, you know, establishing the differential. Here it's fundamentally the personality. In the midst of I remember that Havona is very definitively the Trinity's domain. You have the Father's worlds, the Son's worlds, Spirit's worlds, and the Trinity's domain, the 7 circuits of Havona. So you have that you know, totality attitude, that uniformity of the Trinity overlaid on top of that are these first source personality differentials, you know, in a billion different ways. All right, so there's that. Let's see. When they say longer or shorter time on each of these worlds, you might guess it'll probably be longer when we get to our pattern world. You know, the pattern world for Satania.
Well, that was what was crossing my mind, was aren't there some of these worlds that are going to make us feel a little uncomfortable?
they tell you every world will. I mean, you'll just get used to one, and then you'll be totally discombobulated when you go to the next one, because it's absolutely different, you know. So every time you'll just be thrown totally off your game. I mean, you'll have to start from scratch in coming into relationship with that next world. Yeah, it'll be nothing but odd. Okay, it's like you'll never have even remotely imagined that an experience could be like that when you go to the next world.
I really like some places, sort of like France.
Right, yeah. The effort, struggle, conflict is always in play. You're going to have to really effort to come into relationship with each sphere. You know, but if you succeed, effort, struggle, conflict, faith, determination, love, loyalty, and progress, you'll make progress. And when you've made progress, then you go to the next sphere and start all over again. Effort, struggle, conflict. Yeah.
You couldn't enjoy it if it weren't that way.
Yeah, I mean, you'll be so thrilled. Remember how when you're reading that, this will be just endlessly exciting to you. You know, you would be so disappointed if you were familiar with anything.
It would be so
cool. All right. All right. Yeah, you know you're not in Havana when one place is like the next place.
Things or anything like that. Oh, we're in Havana.
And then the last thing there, the italicized upward and inward. Think about how literal this is again. Remember where we are. We're thinking about Havana, okay? Where the geometry that they give us to understand Havana is that you have these billion worlds in seven circuits in a plane. Okay? It's all in a plane. It's like a two-dimensional place. Can I go up? No, there is no up in Havana. All I can do is go in. Okay? Recognize that there's a truth that's been made fact. Literally, the geometry of Havana expresses the truth that they're pointing out, that moving towards paradise is moving inward. You know, the psychic circles, we think of them as circles of smaller and smaller radius until, as a first circler, you're the same radius as that rod that is the adjuster that's been inserted down into your mind from infinity. Okay? You're moving inward towards it. I mean, the fact that that's the real truth of it, that you're moving inward, is literally made geometry. Okay? It's not a coincidence that Havana has that geometry. It's expressing the truth that the journey is purely inward. There is no up and down, you know, in the place. Okay. Now, of course, when we're often talking about, you know, being upist, you know, don't be a flatlander out here, you know, we're trying to get, you know, flatlanders, animal origin selves, to recognize that there's this third dimension. That third dimension, okay, is the radial dimension in Havana.
Right.
Yeah. You know, so, you know, if you're a flatlander and you're trying to find God and you're going left and right, you know, you're going all over in the plane, you know, think of that plane as being turned up, you know, like this, you know, with Havana and your desire, you know, God is here. You know, you're trying to get closer to God, you know, you're going tangential to the direction. Yeah. Yeah. At best, you're maybe navigating around a circuit in Havana, but you're not getting any closer.
Is that your interpretation of inward? Because I was thinking it was inward.
Well, but see, again, that's two things. There's the intensive and the extensive, and lo and behold, they're the same thing. Again, when I think of inward in my inner life, I'm going inward towards the core of the heart within. Yeah, that's a valid understanding. But notice that the geometry of the master universe expresses that fact, okay? It's not just intensively that you're going inward. It's also extensively. When you start to, you know, traverse space, you have to go inward in order to go inward.
Okay. So the gravity.
If I go outward in the master universe, I go outward in my inner life. I'm going away from the center. If I'm going away, they're one and the same thing. Yeah.
So the capitals of the super universes are inward in a way, because if somebody is between the central universe and the capital of the super universe, they're going outward by a purely linear understanding. Do you know what
mm-hmm.
I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they have to. It has to be an inward somehow. Extensively, it has to be.
Wait, no, I'm not following you there.
So if someone lives on a world that's between the central universe and the capital of their local universe, and they're ascending, they're going away from the central universe.
Well, unless you rotate them out like this. Guess what? I mean, it's going to take you a long time to ascend to Uversa, and you know, your old stomping grounds will get rotated.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's not as linear or as simple.
Right. You know, you don't want to, it's not simplistically radial.
Yeah.
But think of it as more fractal terms. I mean, I'm going inward, and then I have to go up to a higher geometry, and I'm going inward again. You know, you're always going inward. It's just there's multiple levels to the geometry. It's only at the absolute level that there's only one dimension, distance from the aisle. You know, where it's literally linear like that. Absolute finite, it's more complicated. But the fact that you can understand, you know, as a series of hierarchically related inward journeys, the fact that it's always understandable as inward, fundamentally, is because it's all a downstepped expression of an absolute fact, where there is only a radial relationship to the center of infinity. Yeah, you know, just like your personality has only one absolute dimension. All right, let's see. Where were we? We finished that up. Okay, yeah. So again, so you just said a little snippet about the eternal days, but we managed to talk about a whole bunch of things. And that's only because they did a very good job of giving us some stuff that we could play off of. Because certainly, for a long, long time, the Eternals of Days are going to be an abstraction in many ways. I mean, it's going to be a long time before you have the eyes to see and say hello to an Eternal of Days. But nonetheless, you know, appreciate how they're involved in things that get downstepped into your life. All these things have some sort of a downstepped expression in your life. The worlds that they are rulers of have a fundamental inward character, and you know that whole inwardness. That's how you've come to discover your inner life.
So as each of their worlds is modeled after their personal ideal,
mm-hmm.
is that the implication that each of the systems in a super universe is somehow modeled after the ideal?
Right, so you take the ideals and ideas, no, this is both of them, of a Havona world, and then you pass that through the lens of a particular master spirit, and it gets expressed out in a super universe. So, yeah.
There's a sentence in the book about paradise, and if you can connect it to what we're talking about, that would be great.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the Isle of Paradise has a universe location, but no position in space.
Right.
So we're talking about going inward.
Right. So again, like I was just, it was what I was just saying to Shane there. It has no location in finite space. It has a location in absolute space, quote unquote. And that's kind of a, you know, but let's just go with that that expression for simplicity. I mean, the way I've tried to point this out is, I mean, if you could see the cosmos infinite, you know, so that, and you could see everything arranged in some vast infinite cosmos, you know, and this thing is here and this thing is here, there would be this whole geometry to this whole arrangement of the cosmos infinite. You'd notice there would be a center to that whole geometry. Literally, the aisle is in the center of that geometry. But that's not a finite geometry. It's not even an absolute geometry. It's at best what we could think of as an absolute geometry. And the Isle of Paradise is located at the center of radial lines of absolute space that extend out. But if I can't travel on an absolute path. I'm a finite being. I can only travel on a finite path. And the finite space, the finite path that I can walk, it has a center of symmetry to it. You know, the whole master universe, or just, you know, the super universe level, you know, goes around a central point. There's a center of symmetry of that geometry. But if I walk on the finite flagstones across space to that center of symmetry, there's no aisle there. I mean, I won't even find the central universe. I mean, those things are not in finite space. The Isle of Paradise is not a finite fact. It's an absolute fact. It doesn't fit into finite space. You have to go above finite space to get to it. And it's a long journey. You're going, you know, really traveling along the finite path, you can only get to the doors of Ona. You know, and then it's not a horizontal path anymore. It's a staircase. Okay? You start climbing up out of the finite, and you climb and you climb. You climb up to supremacy, and you climb up through the absonite, and you climb up to ultimacy, and you climb up through co-absoluteness, until finally you get to an absolute plateau. It's called the aisle. Way, way up from where we are. You know, if you just stay on the plane, you'll go right underneath that whole staircase, and you'll get to the center, you know, you'll get underneath the aisle, quote unquote. Okay? But not in a finite sense. It's not like Vona is floating, you know. I mean, it's just not there. It's nowhere in finite space. It's not anywhere in finite space.
We do look at it as upward.
Yeah.
In your example.
Right. See, and that's what I was saying. I mean, you have to kind of combine these analogies. None of these analogies gives you everything you need.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, when you're talking about that journey, like I said, the simplest way to analogize it is to think of the billion worlds as a billion step staircase, you know, and you just go around this spiral staircase. You know, ever going upward and inward until finally you take the last step up onto the aisle. But what you're really doing is not a finite upward journey. It's, it's upward in the sense of we think of transcendence as being upward. You're transcending the finite. You're going above the finite. You know, that's why they use the prefix super. Like an absonite creature is a super creature. It's an above creature. It's up from our creatureness.
It's like a different dimension.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, it's just not, you know, just don't let that, don't use that word dimension in the fuzzy sense. I mean, try to think of it in as literal terms as you can. You know, it's not in the way the New Agers use the word dimension. You know, it's not in another dimension like that, you know, or spiritists, you know, thinking that, you know, the ghosts in the room are in another dimension or something. I mean, that's all just fuzzy words, you know. I mean, this is all, you know, this is all very literal. But yes, its literalness is not directly understandable, so we have to use analogies.
Okay. So if we're phrenologers at the end, so we're always on that path then.
you know, if you're a finality, you know, you're a six-stage spirit for a long time. And in that, in a sense, you know, you're drifting up. You're trying to come into a holistic relationship with the Supreme, you know, as a finality. You're journeying all over the seven super universes, trying to come into relationship with all of the, basically all the different staircases. You know, you get to the Isle of Paradise on the only staircase that you have access to initially. Okay? But then you go out and you explore all the other staircases. And once you have this complete relationship with all the paths from the mortal life to the Isle, you now have a relationship to the whole. Okay? And when we all have such a relationship, then the grand universe is settled in light and life, and we're all lifted up. Okay. But, you know, you have this very circumscribed, this very limited initial relationship to the, you know, the height differential there.
Do we visit each of the other super universes before we reach Havona?
No. Just, yeah, see, that's, we're very limited. We only go in our super universe to start with. And that's simply because to go to another super universe, you need to be minded above the level of your super universe. You have to be minded above the level of the reflective mother spirits of our super universe. Well, you know, I'm going to get way up before I have that. So you have to go way up, you know, get a relationship with a higher mind, a mind that's above a super universe, single super universe level, and then you can go all around. Yeah. And the only way to do that is go in. And like I say, see, as you're going in, you're going up. So you are rising up above. I mean, you graduate above that level of just your super universe when you become a graduate spirit, a four-stage spirit, and you go from the seventh to the sixth circuit of Havona. That's why you're called a graduate spirit. You finally have begun to graduate from being wholly limited to just what the seventh master spirit what he encompassed about you to begin with. You know, you've gotten out of that womb, that encompassment, to the first degree. Okay, the ancients of days. Oh, you know what? Before we read this, let me say quickly. Ancients. How ancient is ancient? It's a lot more ancient than Paul. It's even more ancient than Joan. and it better be, because Joan is just not very ancient. So what is it, you know, when we're talking ancient, we're talking really ancient. Just how ancient are we talking here? Okay. This has got to be way beyond anything that anyone has ever imagined ancient could be. Okay. And they give you a little back of the envelope way to get a handle on that. When you're reading in the problems of the Lucifer Rebellion, and they give you an analogy to help you try to understand, if you're one of the ancients of days and you're thinking about this adjudication, what kind of a temporal, you know, relative temporal perspective do you have on this? You know, and they say, well, you know, it's been 200,000 years already since the rebellion. And they say, well, imagine it was still another 100,000 years before it's adjudicated. Imagine the whole thing went on for 300,000 years. If you're an ancient of days, you've been living for a really long time, in relative terms, what does that feel like? What does 300,000 years feel like relative to how long you've been in charge of the seventh super universe? Okay? And they tell you it's 2.5 seconds. Well, in what sense? Okay, they say that if you take an average human life, so let's say it's 80. Let's just take by reason of strength, force core. So let's assume that's a reasonable literal number that I can use for an average human lifespan, 80 years. So They're saying that 80 years compared to 2.5 seconds is the same ratio as however long the Uversa government, you know, the Seven Super Universe headquarters, the Uversa headquarters has been in existence. That span compared to 300,000 years. Okay, so you can calculate that. See, you've got two ratios. You can set them equal to each other. Okay, so figure out how many seconds are in 80 years, you know, and divide that by 2.5 seconds. You know, what's that ratio? It's a billion. They're saying it's like 1 in a billion. Okay, well, if I take a billion times 300,000 years, give me an estimate of how long the super universe government has been in existence. That's 300 trillion years. Okay. So that's an estimate of how ancient an Ancient of Days is. Now, he might be a little older than that, but as we'll see, maybe not tonight, but next week. That's a reasonable estimate to how old an Ancient of Days is. That he's roughly 300 trillion years old. Earth years. 300 trillion Earth years old. Okay. And so, you know, now, that's not an extreme number on the scale of some of the numbers they give you. Remember, they give you a time scale for how long it takes a little spiral nebula, the Andromeda Nebula, to form and get brought into the Milky Way and become, you know, incorporated into our local universe. You know, that time scale, that's about 1 trillion years. Okay, so this is 300 times that. Yeah. So that's giving you some sense. I mean, how long has it taken to assemble the super universe to this stage? You know, you've got basically 300 times it takes the time it takes for one little component. That seems, you know, I mean, this is all, not all happening sequentially. You know, it's all happening, you know, a lot of it's happening simultaneously. So that's the sense. That's how long, you know, compared to, you know, some tiny little number that, you know, Big Bang theorists or something think. I mean, okay, this gives you a real sense of just how long the Milky Way has been building up to its current state. 300 trillion years. And these guys we're about to read about have been there the whole time. They have a very, very long-term view of things. 300,000 years is, relative to their lifespan, is not very long.
How many Big Bangs have we had?
Quite a few. See, isn't the current number that they play around with 13.75 billion, I think it is? Yeah. That goes into 300 trillion quite a few times.
Three, the Ancients of Days. When mortals of time graduate from the training world surrounding the headquarters of a local universe and are advanced to the educational spheres of their super universe, they have progressed in spiritual development to that point where they are able to recognize and communicate with the high spiritual rulers and directors of these advanced realms, including the Ancients of Days.
Okay, so that gives you an idea of how much above you they are. We can understand them as this individual that's located at some point, and I can walk up and say hi to them, but I've got to go up a ways to get to them. I have no way to interact with them until I'm a first stage spirit. So I've got to get all the way up through the whole local universe climb of Marantia. Got to make that whole vertical climb before I would know that I was standing in front of an ancient of days, or a perfection of days or a recent of days, as we're about to read about. So that gives you a little idea of how far up they are. And it's also kind of an interesting thought, because these are Supreme Trinity personalities. So to get to the point where I can have kind of a face-to-face interaction with a Supreme Being, not the Supreme Being, but a Supreme Being, okay, I don't have to go that far, really, when you think about it. So how is that possible that with just that little bit of journey up the climb of my local universe, I can say hi face-to-face to one of these supreme beings. Now, what's the secret to that? You have an adjuster. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about this. I mean, just to have any relationship with an adjuster, the adjuster can only reach down to the supreme level in the, in the chart of the psychic circles in the sevenfold. You've got to get up to third circle, up to have an initial engagement of supremacy to supremacy. So you know that all you're doing through the local universe career is taking that initial thread that you fuse to the adjuster and getting all the rest of you infused into the adjuster, getting all the rest of you up to that supremacy nature. So when you're first stage spirit, you have all of you up there, and then you can see a Supreme Trinity personality.
You have to go with minor major sectors first.
No, that's it. I mean, to actually get to them, yes. But, I mean, if they were standing on Salvington, you could see them as a first stage spirit. See, that's the point they're trying to make. See, even the Ancients of Days, you have the ability to interact with them. No. You've gotten up to their level in terms of the nature of their energy, that you can interact with it.
What exactly are the educational spheres of their super universe? That's when you can interact with them.
Well, our super universe. Not theirs. Right. I mean, for instance, I may not actually see a recent of days when I'm on Salvington. I might, but I might not. I'd have to actually journey to my minor sector headquarters, and meet them there for the first time. Okay. But see, I could, as a first stage spirit leaving Salvington, I have the eyes to see them. Okay, that's all they're trying to say here. Now, one other little subtext there is, do I have the eyes to see an eternal of days at this point? Maybe, they don't say for certain. But they said here that, at the beginning of the eternals of days, where was that? The eternals of days are visible to all will creatures dwelling in their domains. It kind of sounds like maybe I need to be a third stage spirit before I can see them. I don't know for certain. Because, when you get up to Yversa, you're a third stage spirit. And that's what you are to get in the gates of Avona. So maybe I've got to climb a little bit more before I can see an eternal days. But again, see, most likely I would never have the opportunity to see one anyway until I'm a third stage spirit on Yversa. Because they might come out to visit. Yeah, but not definitive there, but definitely definitive here. And it makes obvious sense that when I'm a first stage spirit, I have myself infused into an adjuster. I've gotten myself all up to that. Instead of just referring to it, again, I've gotten myself all up to this fourth cosmic level here, this supreme level. Okay, then I can see eye to eye with these Supreme Trinity personalities.
These adjusters really have to be patient, don't they?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And of course we do too, because this is going to take a long time to get to that point. You need to be very patient.
The Ancients of Days are all basically identical. They disclose the combined character and unified nature of the Trinity. They possess individuality and are in personality diverse, but they do not differ from each other as do the seven master spirits. They provide the uniform directorship of the otherwise differing seven super universes, each of which is a distinct, segregated, and unique creation. The seven master spirits are unlike in nature and attributes, but the Ancients of Days, the personal rulers of the super universes, are all uniform and super perfect offspring of the Paradise Trinity.
Let's see. Let me digest a couple things there first. These two paragraphs go together, but let's take them one at a time. Okay, so we've talked about this some already. Here, might as well pull out that. Yeah. Whenever we bring up the psychic circles in the seven folder, we recognize now that we have this second cosmic level here, which is the level of the individual super universe. And then we have a notch up, the level of the collective super universes. And then above that is that grand universe level. Okay? And we, when you look at it in terms of the mother presences, they have this very definitive, a relationship to that hierarchy. You have the reflective mother spirits at the level of the individual super universe. And then you have the creative mother agencies, the ancients of days, that are at that collective super universe level. Okay? We've mentioned that several times, but you can see here again they're referring to that the ancients of days, because they are uniform in nature, because they're all coming from that undivided nature of the Paradise Trinity. They have this uniform nature that is above the differences of the seven super universes. Okay? So they could have these mother-like beings in association with them, the creative mother agencies of the ancients of days, that are above the mothers that are tied to the master spirits. That's just a simple deduction from what they're telling you here. We also referred to this just recently when we were talking about the seven supreme executives. So when they say uniform and super perfect, I mentioned that we were going to get to that sentence back when we were in the previous paper, when we were reading about the seven supreme executives. They said the seven supreme executives are uniformly and divinely perfect, but they also possess diversity of personality. And same way with the ancients of days, they have the diversity of personality. But of the executives, they said that same thing, uniformly and divinely perfect. And here we have uniform and super perfect. Same pattern, with one little tweak, that prefix, super. Why? What does that mean? Okay, so we have, we're talking about seven supreme executives, and here we're talking about supreme Trinity personalities. So there can definitely be supreme perfection that they have in common. Okay, so they would be perfect and perfect. But there's one thing that's definitively different about an ancient of days. They're God. They're God. Right. See, if you go back even more so, it's like, okay, if I compare those two, I think really I shouldn't call the seven supreme executives God. Because right here, they're using this distinction. The ones that are definitively God, they're calling super perfect. They just called them perfect. So it's even more indication that our initial tendency was, okay, I probably shouldn't think of the executives as God. Perfect on the same footing. Amen.
Where do I go in the book to learn about the creative mother agencies? I had missed that
somewhere. It is only indirectly. You can't find mother agencies. Creative agencies. Creative agencies and creative and agents. Okay. Look at agents of the ancients of days and creative agencies. The mother is, you're deducing that when you're putting the pieces together. Oh, I get it, their mother being. Okay, so even, we won't get to it tonight, but, the next group of days are called the perfections of days. Okay, so they're perfect. You know, and they mentioned the seven supreme executives were perfect. See, so you can, they're pointing to some commonality there. But then you have these super perfect. You've got, you know, the perfections of days aren't God either. Super perfect. So they're trying to give you a little sense in the whole scheme of these supreme beings. You know, the ancients of days do stand up a notch because they're God. And like we were just saying with the Eternals of Days, that kind of puts them on eye level then with the Eternals of Days, who are by nature up a notch, even though they're not God, because they have ultimate personality activity. Okay?
And interestingly, the Ancients of Days are like standing in for the Supreme. When the Supreme is complete, then the Supreme will take over.
You're jumping ahead. That's later in the section. Yes, yes.
And that could be a reason. See, it is in context, because that might be the reason.
Why. They do need to have a little bit of above, you know, and their godness gives them that. Okay, so you know, we talked about that extensively. That's just, you know, the key thing, that just like the fact that the master spirits, the key thing was not so much their personality, but their deity nature being different. Here again, the key thing is not so much their personality. It's their uniform nature. So again, shades of this Trinity side of the picture as opposed to the first source personality side. All right.
The seven master spirits on high determine the nature of their respective super universes. But the ancients of days dictate the administration of these same super universes. They superimpose administrative uniformity on creative diversity and ensure the harmony of the whole in the face of the underlying creational differences of the seven segmental groupings of the grand universe.
Okay, so two things. Oh, actually, yeah, two things in there. Let's just do two things. So the first of the two italicized words. We're going beyond a monotheism where we just have a singular God notion. And here we're talking about two different sets of gods, the master spirits and the ancients of days. Instead of having all the godness in one place, in one person, there's been some delegation of God activity. To the master spirits was delegated that they determine the nature. God says the nature of this super universe is going to be X. Okay, and that God is a master spirit, not the universal father. And then, but there's even more delegation. That God, that master spirit, doesn't get to dictate the administration. That's delegated even, you know, to another. The ancients, you know, regardless of what the master spirit demands the nature be, the ancients of day is God of how it's administered. Okay. And one of the things that he's dictating is, I'm going to administer this from a perspective that's above your circumscribed nature, Mr. Master Spirit, God. Okay? I'm going to superimpose. I'm going to impose from above you. I'm going to superimpose administrative uniformity on creative diversity. Yeah. And see, that's the fact that it says superimpose. In other words, he has to lay down something that's definitively above what the master spirits lay down, or it's not superimposed. That's, you know, that the presence, the mother presence that he lays down, the creative mother agencies of the ancients of days, has to be above the reflective mother spirits of the masters, the reflective mother spirits of the master spirits, or it wouldn't be superimposed. So, see, it's just putting all of these very direct statements together, and you can fill this chart out. Okay. You know, and you know, so you go, okay, I'm looking for something, some being that's related to the Ancients of Days that can be superimposed upon the reflective mother spirits, and you notice coincidentally they reveal the name. They can't tell you where it fits into the picture, but they give you the name in a list in paper 30, you know, all the beings listed. And there's a list of beings that don't really fit in any categories, and one of them is the unrevealed creative agencies. And the Ancients of Days, well, you start thinking about all the clues, and it's like, oh, I know where they go. Okay. They're the superimposition that they're talking about here. Okay. Superimposition is not just a concept. It has to be, there has to be something literal. Okay? And they've, see, if they didn't give you the name for that, even though it's the details are unrevealed, there would be something missing here. Now, sometimes they will you know, sort of just leave it to you to give a name for something that is an obvious missing puzzle piece. But if they don't want you to mess that up, they'll at least give you the name. They won't tell you what puzzle piece it is, but they'll give you this name. And then, you know, like they'll tell you there's Architects of Being, okay? And then you've got to figure out where that puzzle piece goes. You know, even what that puzzle piece is, but you know what the puzzle piece is called. They didn't want you to have the liberty of naming the puzzle piece. It's like, no, you need to call that puzzle piece when you finally figured out the Architects of Being, you know, or the creative agencies. And you'll see they refer to that when we get, and next week when they talk about the perfections of days, they talk a little bit about that, giving us names for things. So just that delegation of God activity is the italicized words, and then that superimposed, see, that's a very key word. That they're telling you, if you hadn't figured it out already, that this has got to be something above a master spirit. And so you can't just think, let me just point out that one more thing. If all you've figured out is the sevenfold creators, if that's all you've managed to figure out so far in the book, you know, and you see the master spirits are above the Ancients of Days, it's like, well, wait a minute, if the Ancients of Days are below the master spirits, how could they superimpose anything? There must be more to the picture than just that column. Yeah, there's this column, the cosmic mothers. Okay? You've got to, you know, otherwise there's no way to understand that sentence. Okay. All right.
The Ancients of Days were all trinitized at the same time. They represent the beginning of the personality records of the universe of universes, hence their name, Ancients of Days. When you reach paradise and search the written records of the beginning of things, you will find that the first entry appearing in the personality section is the recital of the trinitization of these 21 Ancients of Days.
Notice twice in there. Trinitization, they're trinitized. See, the Trinity is bringing the selves into existence. Yes, the Father is personalizing them, but their self is being trinitized into existence, not created into existence. Which is also, the way they worked with the seven supreme executives. That was also a trinitization, remember that? Now, we talked about the ancient, how ancient is ancient. But just one thing that maybe is not immediately apparent, think until you reflect on this carefully. You know, if they're the first persons on, in the personality section, the recital of finite time. Okay. See, they're the first persons on the finite personality record. They're finite selves with supreme personality activity. Just like an absonite self, like an architect of the master universe, will have ultimate personality activity. See, so distinguishing that, another way, the self and the personality. You know, just the self, you're gonna talk about finite or absonite. When you talk about the personality activity, that's supreme or ultimate. Okay. And there's, you know, the really definitive example of that is when you're talking about the transcendent domain. There's 7 different levels of the absonite. And there's 7 different levels of architects to match those 7 different levels of absonite selves, high absonite selves, and low. Okay, there's this whole hierarchy of absonite selves. And superimposed upon that are 4 levels of ultimate personality activity. That's why there's 4 outer space levels. Okay. 4 levels of ultimate personality activity. So there's 4 outer space levels. So you're, first of all, you're achieving completeness of the first level of ultimate personality activity. And then the second level of ultimate personality activity. That's what, so you have, there's, you know, in the same way that we're with the finite, you know, this grand universe settled in light and life, that's supreme personality activity on the whole finite. So it's just one level, because it's just one level of supreme personality activity encompassing the whole finite. But there's these 4 hierarchical ways of encompassing the absonite, progressively higher and higher. Okay, so.
You wouldn't want to mention those, would you?
What?
The 7 levels of the absonite. I don't think those.
Well, they don't have names per se, but you know, if you look up the master architects, you know, to think about those, how they're relating to those 7 levels, but where it mentions the 7 levels of the absonite and the 4 levels of ultimate personality activity, that's in paper 30. Yep, when they're talking about the transcendentals.
This sentence seems like I can understand, I think, harmony, but when it says they superimpose administrative uniformity on creative diversity, I mean, that seems like you're dealing with opposites.
Well, it's similar to, I mean, you notice what it says after that. See, and ensure the harmony of the whole. Okay, so how do you get harmony? You have to have 2 things in order to achieve harmony. First, you have to have individuality, and then you have to bring that individuality into relationship with unity, uniformity. So, if I bring matter and its individuality into relationship with spirit and its unity. So you have this unity of the spirit, the individuality of the matter. If I bring them into relationship, the individuality is not in some random arrangement. It arranges itself so that it can strike step with the unity. Such an arrangement is what we call harmony. There's a particular way that you can arrange things. You know, you're thinking about the unity. It's like, well, I can't just literally make unity out of individuality. I can't, you know, put a rolling pin on it and smear it all out into a unity. It has this definite individuality that I can't change. But I discover that there's a certain arrangement that rings, comes into resonance with the unity. I mean, that's what we discover, you know, when we plunked 3 keys on a piano. Not any old 3 keys, but a certain 3 keys. It's like, wow, there's something about that. There's a unity to that. It's not, you know, it's 3 keys. It's not literally just 1 key. But there's some, see, that's, there's a harmony. there's a unity likeness, that's harmony. Okay, so that's, there has to be a unity.
And you think about a chord as an additive consequence.
That's what I was going to say.
Of the three individual keys. Right.
Yeah, it's always super additive to the three keys.
Right. Yeah, so see, again, it's another way. It's like the very fact that you have seven distinct super universes, and you know that somehow they have to come together as one grand universe, there must be some unity above their individuality that could bring them together into harmony. Who is that? It's the Ancients of Days. They have that uniformity.
In a simple way, that if you have two people in relationship, they're diverse, but in a really good marriage, they have, in a sense, a unity.
Yeah, I mean, the way to achieve a it's a simple concept. Yes, right. Not easy in that, implementation, but. Yes, and how can that be? How can there be such a true monogamous relationship? If there's a unity above that both can look up to, if there's a whole above the individuals, and the two connect themselves together through, in relation to that whole, through the individuality of the whole, which only persons can do, selves can't do, selves get divorced. Okay? Persons have the potential to be connected through the individuality of the whole and live together as one, to be part of a cosmic system. Again, it's there always has to be a whole and an individuality, a node to it through which we can connect. So, it's just all we're talking about is up at this very high level. There has to be an individuality of the collective seven super universes through which the individual super universes can be connected to each other and be part of a cosmic system. There has to be a mother presence, that's of all seven. I know that there has to be such a thing because I'm eventually going to be in a womb of mind that allows me to go to all seven super universes. There must be some womb of mind above the seven little wombs of mind, or I couldn't ever get out of my super universe. Yeah. See, that's it. You start to, once you start to get this, it all is actually is much more straightforward than it initially seems. All right, what else do we have here? Where in the heck are we anyway? That's it. Oh, yeah. go ahead. Yep.
These high beings always govern in groups of three. There are many phases of activity in which they work as individuals, still others in which any two can function. But in the higher spheres of their administration, they must act jointly. They never personally leave their residential worlds, but they do not have to, for these worlds are the super universe focal points of the far-flung reflectivity system.
Just one quick little thing. We'll get to the rest of the story in the next two sections next time. But just to get you thinking about this, why do you have this pattern where, there are many phases of activity in which they work as individuals. Still others in which two, and then something three. There must be three different modes in the super universe. Yeah, there's three different levels. Individuality level, and they're individuals. Associativity level, and the unity level. If they have to engage the unity, they need all three. Associativity two, individuality one. That's why they said it, they can work as individuals and engage the individuality level. And you'll see how the perfections of days and the reasons of days fit into this pattern when we get to those.
The personal abodes of each trio of the Ancients of Days are located at the point of spiritual polarity on their headquarters sphere. Such a sphere is divided into 70 administrative sectors and has 70 divisional capitals in which the Ancients of Days reside from time to time.
Okay, so this orange has 70, right? 70 sectors. Again, you know, they're sectors. Just think about it very literally, longitudinal sectors. And remember we mentioned this spiritual polarity thing. We were talking about the reflective mother spirits, you know, who are also here, like, you know, in our case on Uversa. They're at the mindal, the point of mindal polarity. The Ancients of Days are at the point of spiritual polarity. Those two points of polarity are not one and the same point. You know, remember we mentioned that when we were talking about the reflective mother spirits, because you have this separateness of the mindal womb and the spiritual womb. The reflective mother spirits are the collective mindal womb. The master spirit is the spiritual womb. It's two separate beings, you know, quote unquote, the seven reflective mother spirits as one mother. But that those two wombs are separate. That's why you have them rooted at the two different poles. Okay, whereas the mindal pole and the spiritual pole are the same when those two wombs are together in the creative mother spirit. Okay.
In power, scope of authority, and extent of jurisdiction, the Ancients of Days are the most powerful and mighty of any of the direct rulers of the time-space creations. In all the vast universe of universes, they alone are invested with the high powers of final executive judgment concerning the eternal extinction of will creatures. And all three Ancients of Days must participate in the final decrees of the Supreme Tribunal of a super universe.
Yeah, again, you just mean because they're God. You know, you have these other supreme personalities, even some with ultimate and stuff, you know, but they're God. So when all is said and done, you know, they have the final say. They're the superimposition, you know.
Aside from the deities and their paradise associates, the Ancients of Days are the most perfect, most versatile, and the most divinely endowed rulers in all time-space existence. Apparently, they are the supreme rulers of the super-universes, but they have not experientially earned this right to rule and are therefore destined sometime to be superseded by the supreme being, an experiential sovereign, whose vicegerents they will undoubtedly become.
And what's the shades of that? You know, when they say whose vicegerents they will undoubtedly become, you know, why do they, you know, undoubtedly think that? Because the shades of that are already in play. Remember those associates of the Supreme Being? The unqualified supervisors of the Supreme? Who do they supervise? The Ancients of Days. Okay. They're supervisors. You know. So your question is, supervisors of whom? They're supervisors of the Ancients of Days. The Supreme Being, through those his associates, the unqualified supervisors, are already, see, top-downing on the Ancients of Days.
That's a kind of a funny term, actually, from the standpoint of our language, because in our language, if you're unqualified to do something, you probably shouldn't be doing it.
But, you know, we talked about that. Remember, you know, when we first mentioned them back, remember when they mentioned about the Eternals of Days coming out to the, you know, they also mentioned the unqualified supervisors, and we talked about that. You know, it's unqualified in the sense of, you know, the unqualified absolute. You know, they are unqualifiedly, you know, direct representatives of the Supreme Being. They're not watered down representatives. Okay? There's no qualification in play. When they supervise, it's as if the Supreme Being was supervising. It's as if they were already the vicegerents of the Supreme Being. And of course, from the Supreme Being's perspective, they already are, because he's a transcendental being, and the finite age is already at an end. See, I mean, all this stuff is, you know.
So they have no doubt.
So, Yeah, but that just, you know, even within time, you can know this. Because even though you can't see the Supreme Being, you can see the unqualified supervisors, and you can see what they're doing. You know who they supervise. Yeah. Obviously, the Ancients of Days are the vicegerents of the Supreme Being.
The Supreme Being is achieving the sovereignty of the seven super universes by experiential service, just as a creator's son experientially earns the sovereignty of his local universe. But during the present age of the unfinished evolution of the Supreme, the Ancients of Days provide the coordinated and perfect administrative overcontrol of the evolving universes of time and space. And the wisdom of originality and the initiative of individuality characterize all the decrees and rulings of the Ancients of Days.
They are, you know, just reminding you at the end, when all is said and done about the uniformity and the Trinity origin, you know, commonality, they're still absolutely unique persons. And personality cannot be calculated in advance, you know. It's the wisdom of individuality and the initiative of individuality. Did you notice one of the things that in passing there we've talked about? Justice administration, totality attitude, coordinated and perfect administrative overcontrol, coordinate action and cosmic overcontrol. Okay, so you know, it's all in play. But again, especially from our perspective right now, it's the justice administration part, the fact that they are the judges, and that's why. Because that's the primary fact, especially in relationship to us. That's why they took that name, Ancient of Days, in Daniel, you know, that alternate name for the monotheistic God, and used it for these beings, you know, added the plural, Ancients of Days. Now, because in that context, when that monotheistic God in Daniel is called the Ancient of Days, what's he up to? Judgment. In the context of that usage, he's acting as the judge. You know, and the Ancients of Days are the, capital J, judges. They are the judges. You know, the Universal Father doesn't judge you. Eternal Son doesn't judge you. I mean, Master Spirits don't judge you. I mean, where is God made judge? Capital J, judge. This is God made judge. They are executive judgment. And not just in a divine sense, but see in the personalized deity sense. They are judgment made God. And I mean, because of that, you know, often when you're thinking about the Universal Father and the Creator Son and the relationship, you know, you speak of mercy, love, and then there's the prickly ones, you know, the Ancients of Days. And their right-hand men down here in the trenches, the Verondadex, the Most Highs, who rule in the kingdoms of men, okay, the prickly ones. You know, the ones that take no cognizance of your individuality. You know, if the whole demands that you die, then you're going to die. Michael will minister mercy up until the point you die, but you will die. Because who's above Michael as God? The Ancients of Days. They trump.
They use the term mighty, and they said most mm-hmm. powerful and mighty.
Uh-huh.
So they're not synonyms. What do they mean by mighty? They don't use that term indiscriminately.
No. They're invoking, there's mighty and then there's the almighty. So remember, they're supreme creator personalities. They have an awful lot to do with bringing the Almighty into existence, you know, So they're pointing that out, that they're a very definitive point of mightiness that feeds into the almightiness of the Almighty Supreme. So that whole, that we have that whole long-standing history of talking about God Almighty. They're just pointing out, you definitely, when you're talking about those where justice rather than mercy leads, I mean, they're persons still, there's mercy there, but that's not what they lead with. They don't lead with mercy. They lead with justice. It definitely, when you're talking about a God that leads with the justice side of things, that really fits into the long-standing God Almighty, concept. The wrathful volcano God bringing down his judgment upon you. But powerful too. I mean, they're at the node of the whole power grid of energy distribution too. So they definitely hold the reins of power in the super universe too. As well as that, that different sense, the way we use, power is mighty, but they're using mighty in the sense of, like God Almighty. That real judgment, sense of God. All right, is that I guess that'll have to do it. It's way past. Thanks everyone for sticking with that one. So we'll get we'll head on down through the hierarchy next time. But that was kind of fun to. Thanks for bringing in some fun things to play off of there, everyone. I appreciate that. Let's take a moment to reflect on that.